Hey Retrospectors, for our third birthday, we've filmed an hour-long Q&A answering your questions.
We discuss our favourite facts, how we make the show, and what we've learned along the way.
If you're already supporting us on Patreon, thank you. You can watch it right now at patreon.com/retrospectors.
And if you're not a Patreon member, sign up. You don't have to pay a thing to become a free member and watch it now.
So check it out. It's free. patreon.com/retrospectors.
It's April 8th, 2008. And another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
Picture the scene. You're at the tills in your local supermarket. You're feeling a bit peckish. You look over at the impulse snack stand next to the checkout and you realize the chocolate bars have been replaced with granola bars and dried fruit. Do you leave the queue and head back down the aisles in search of chocolate? Probably not. You'll just grab one of those granola bars and not be super happy with it. Well, congratulations, because you've just been nudged. The theory of behavioral economics laid out in the Pop Science bestseller Nudge, published Today in History in 2008.
Yeah, and a real bestseller, a worldwide bestseller. More than 2 million copies of this book by the legal scholar Cass Sunstein and the economist Richard Thaler were sold. The full title, Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness. And what's unusual about it, aside from the fact that it is a pop science book that then had a thesis that actually seemed to infiltrate governments very, very quickly like a virus, is that it was to be read in both ways, as something that as a normal kind of everyday reader you could find intriguing about behavioral science, but also genuinely as a guide to action for governments and institutions across the world. And they took the bait.
Yeah. So Thaler says that he came up with the term libertarian paternalism, which is the sort of philosophical underpinning for Nudge. Libertarian meaning people can still make their own choices, but paternalism because you're being pushed towards something by a guiding force. He came up with it in a discussion with another economist, Casey B. Mulligan, and then continued to discuss the term and the idea during a weekly lunch that he had with Cass Sunstein, who became his co-writer. Thaler says that there was a particular moment that guided his thinking. He said at a dinner party he once served cashew nuts to his guests before dinner and then watched everyone compulsively grazing. I don't know how long it was taking him to get the meal out. But when he removed the nuts, everyone thanked him for doing so. And he said this behavior, it got him thinking, didn't fit with economic models that assume that we're all rational utility maximizers, i.e. we want the food, we don't want to be deprived of the food. And that inspired him to create the whole field of behavioral economics, which argues that humans consistently make judgment errors influenced by their cognitive biases, and consequently, we should be led to make decisions that are better for us as long as we've had the opportunity to feel as though we have been involved in making that decision.
Yeah, nudge theory is all about the idea that we can't rely on people to make sensible decisions. The most effective way of changing habits is not to try and change the person, but to change their surroundings, to subconsciously predispose them to choose the desired outcome. This is a concept that Thaler and Sunstein have called choice architecture. And depending on whether nudge theory is being used by private companies or by public entities and institutions, the most common end goals are to make you spend more, to make you be healthier, or to make you behave less antisocially, i.e. pay your taxes, throw away your litter, don't piss all over the floor. These are all of the things that nudge theory can help us with. And although it does sound a bit like pop science, you know, these are two serious scholars behind it. Thaler would go on to win the Nobel Prize for economics. And the book is crammed with citations and studies and policy details. So it is a little bit more wonky than the average pop science bestseller.
I mean, the funny thing is that when it was released, it was this huge sensation. But, you know, whether or not nudges actually worked wasn't really being discussed. And particularly with people who were critical of nudge theory, they tended to focus on concerns that government nudges or nudges being used by companies would undermine individual freedom or lead us to worse decisions that disadvantageous rather than the ones that are advantageous. And the worry was that, particularly in a governmental sense, that if nudges could lead to major changes in personal decision making and be used to influence citizen behavior, then this would create the risk of illegitimate state overreach and maybe even, some people would say, totalitarianism. But actually, like, the reviews of the book at the time were that it was a little bit boring. You know, even though it had tried to do this sort of Malcolm Gladwell blink kind of a thing thing of exposing popular psychology to a lay audience. Actually, it wasn't terribly successful, primarily as most reviewers tended to focus on, because it was too case study heavy. It was just a boring, difficult read. And so that was kind of one of the other criticisms that was coming back at it, was that it was just not a very successful book.
Yeah, and also, although it was introducing the concept to readers for the first time, nudging as an actual tactic long predates the book. The classic example is the urinal target, the idea that if you put something in a urinal, men will naturally incline towards hitting it, and thus they will pee more carefully. It got renewed attention in the 1990s when Amsterdam Schiphol Airport placed bullseyes in their urinals, but that it's actually as old as the modern toilet. Thomas Crapper himself put a bee below the waterline of his toilet in the late 19th century, and even then, it was already a common practice among urinal manufacturers of the day. The choice of the bee specifically was a pun on the Latin name for the honeybee genus, Apis.
Okay, but there wasn't a crapper unit within the British government. So that's that's how Nudge really changed things. So let's talk about that. I mean, I guess the two people that this book influenced the most in ways that changed all our lives are David Cameron and Barack Obama. Let's focus on Cameron, since we're broadcasting from Britain. He had been nudged himself by his advisor, Rohan Silver, who had bought 10 copies of the book and put them in a pile in Conservative Party HQ at the very time where it became obvious that Gordon Brown's government was floundering and that David Cameron was going to be our next Prime Minister. And he picked it up and he read it, and it ended up in the Conservative Party manifesto that if elected, they would create a team that would use behavioural science to formulate policy. It's interesting because it's not something the public were crying out for this, but it was there because they really believed that this could be, let's be honest, a cost-efficient way, because they were all about cutting costs, that government, a cost-efficient way to try and persuade people to do better in ways that would bring in more tax revenue, for example, if we changed the wording of tax reminders, and wouldn't actually cost the government more. When they became, well, in coalition with the Liberal Democrats, the government of the United Kingdom, they had to form this thing, the so-called Nudge Unit, the Behavioural Insights Team, which started with a staff of seven and was the world's first government-backed behavioural insight team, or one that was openly discussed anyway. And this has become a template that has been rolled out around the world.
Yeah, I mean, nudge theory really enables governments to paper over the cracks of why people don't behave as desired. You know, if X group of people are less likely to engage in Y desired behavior, there is an argument that resources are better spent addressing why that is than trying to subtly trick them into behaving differently. And if people don't feel they have enough money to pay into pensions, that is a bigger structural issue. But if you're a government that subscribes to nudge theory as being the answer to everything, that's something that you're just not going to look into any further. You know, it's very politically expedient, particularly for governments like the Conservatives in the UK, who want to set themselves apart from Labour, who they've painted as being the nanny state kind of government. This is allowing people to theoretically make their own choices, you know, which is popular among ideological Conservatives as well as among the electorate, who generally don't like being dictated to by any kind of government. Also, you know, they're really cheap compared to implementing real change. And so, and lots of critics have claimed that governments are especially motivated to emphasise nudge theory because it shifts the responsibility for tackling wider issues onto individuals and lessens the pressure on tackling systematic problems. For instance, in the environment, nudges can make people use recycling bins more, but that really is, you know, a drop in the ocean in the battle against climate change. You're not going to be able to nudge companies into stopping relying on fossil fuels. That is going to require some unpopular orders.
Yeah, although curiously, some of the meta-analysis studies seem to suggest that nudge theory tends as a whole not to work, because after all these years, plenty of nudge studies can now be assessed to get a better sense of whether the seemingly revolutionary idea really delivers on its promise. And behavioral economists pull all of those assessments together, and that's how they get their meta-analyses. And one major meta-analysis reported finding no evidence of nudges working whatsoever.
But that's the thing. I mean, I think the science gets very granular, you know, and this is the thing, this is a pop science book that referenced lots of studies. Once you read the individual studies, there was one in particular that was retracted, which was about people declaring in advance that they're going to be honest before they fill out a form that could then later be analogous to a tax form. If they declared in advance they were going to be honest, like taking an oath in court, then they were more likely to be honest than if they'd signed it afterwards saying that they declare honesty. That was proven to be unreplicable, and the original study did say that, but then the follow-on study, when they did it again, didn't. But I just think because it's so intuitive, this stuff, and it's so anecdotally back. Like, I know that every time I drive into my village, I now go slower than I used to because they put one of those signs up that flashes up with an angry face when you're over 30 miles an hour. So I know that I watch Halloween movies on Halloween because Netflix is prompting me to do that. So I know that this works.
Yeah, but at the same time, nothing is going to stop me from pissing on the floor.
Tomorrow.
She famously had bread rolls thrown at her when she was going through Waitrose.
That's never happened to me.
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.